you brought up another point, right? Like, who's making those decisions? I don't think for a successful outcome, any of those decisions can be made in a silo, right? I can't say as a doctor that I want whatever I want and we have to be, agnostic to implementation, logistics, data security, price. We can't just say we want the thing that's the most shiny. We want a halo purchase that's most expensive, or just pick something that's the cheapest if it doesn't work either. These decisions cannot be made in a vacuum. So it really has to be clinical stakeholders, administrative and leadership teams kind of deciding together and deciding what is the best AI for me or us, rather than what is the best AI. I guess that's sort of a very long answer to your question, but I think it's a long conversation.
Well, hello and welcome to the podcast of the American College of Artificial Intelligence and Medicine. Today, on the podcast, we have Vish Mehta, who's an expert in artificial intelligence and pulmonary medicine. And joining me here is the executive vice president of the college, Dr. Anne Slusaritis. And I'll let her kick it off.
Oh, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. Thank you for being here with us. And we have Dr. Spiceman also, who is the president of the American College of AI in Medicine. And I think we'll get started. So, can you tell us a little bit about your background and your journey into AI?
Certainly. I want to thank you both for having me. It's good to join you guys, talk about stuff that certainly for me is very, very interesting, very exciting. So I appreciate the platform. Thank you. As far as background goes, I am an interventional pulmonologist in Las Vegas, and I've been here for 3.5 years. My clinical work is fairly broad in general pulmonary. For the group, I tend to do a lot of the early lung cancer detection, patients, procedures, so on and so forth. And that kind of is my, or was my introduction to AI, because AI in pulmonology, the initial focus has been on lung cancer early detection. Sometimes, we find lung nodules, sometimes we judge the percentage risk of malignancy. And I started reading some of that literature. Long story short, now writing some literature and creating educational content in the field, so on and so forth. So that's kind of my introduction into pulmonary AI.
Well, great. Now, as you and I both did certifications through MIT, I also did one at Northwestern Kellogg, which is the business school. And one of my classmates gave me really good advice. He said, Mel, when you create your website, request it to say dot AI. And I had never heard of that. And then when you and I met, you said, Mel, I have a website that's pulmonary.ai that I created. So tell us about your website and the content and your vision for your website.
Thank you. As you know, you and I did those courses. We have this appetite for education. So it was nice to be able to find the MIT course, and that was a very good general introduction. So I then went on a search and I said, let me try and find AI and pulmonary stuff. And then I Googled and this and that, and I couldn't find the stuff that I wanted or that I felt my colleagues would also be interested in one location. It was all sort of scattered. And then I was thinking to myself, okay, how can I do this in a way where others, who I know there's many others like me who have that same interest, how do I put that information in one place? So I said, let me try and build a website. To my surprise, pulmonary.ai as a domain was available. So I tried like lungs.ai, ai lungs.com, all sorts of combinations, and I love Pangolin.ai. I think it's exactly kind of what I wanted to convey. So, on my lunch break, through my GoDaddy account, I sit and I update my website. So, if I find interesting literature, I go through it, try and understand it, and put maybe just a couple of lines of commentary. I catalog and categorize stuff on the website, and I have different things like asthma, COPD, lung nodules, lung cancer, imaging modalities, and whatever I come across. I don't necessarily chase things because there's just so much data and research being put out in this field. I catalog so others have one place to go to. The website is free. I don't want anyone's email. I'm not asking for anything. There may be a link for that, but I don't believe it goes anywhere beyond, a couple of times people will email me and ask me their questions. There's no commercials, there's no advertisements, there's nothing. It's a free resource that I try to keep up to date as much as I can, just for others to have a starting point as they are trying to educate themselves and share the same spirit that you and I and three of us certainly do. So it's been fun learning how to do some basic stuff online and put that stuff out there.
So, can you be a little bit more specific? How are you utilizing AI?
Certainly. There's a few different places in my practice where we have AI on a daily basis. So our hospital uses a natural language processing software that will continuously scan reports, CT scan reports, and identify lung nodules. So sometimes it's a lung nodule found on a CAT scan of the chest. Sometimes it's a nodule found on a CAT scan of the abdomen or CAT scan of the neck. The software will identify it, populate a list, and our nurse coordinator goes through that list. So she then will try and see if these are patients who already have a cancer diagnosis or not, pulmonologist or not, is the primary care doctor somebody that we can get in touch with or not. Me and some of my thoracic colleagues are also a resource to kind of manage that list. Really, the goal is to capture the incidental nodules and put them in the nodule pipeline, philosophically speaking, and go from there. The other place where I'm seeing some AI, at least in my practice, is in pneumothorax detection. So this happened maybe about a year or so ago, where I was seeing a patient. Me and my residents were looking at, and we saw AI had flagged a pneumothorax. So that was kind of our first introduction to this. And the results of those are also interesting and I think worth talking about. So briefly, I felt the pneumothorax was on one side, the AI felt it was on the other side. We went to see the patient was on room air, and it turns out, the software was flagging something very, very small, and that film had not been read yet. So, within 30 minutes, we kind of had a lot of different things happening where you have a lot of alarm because it's a pneumothorax, and you see that the patient's X-ray, you see it's really not that serious. And then we thought it was on one side, the AI thought it was on the other side. The radiologist basically said there's really nothing of consequence when they eventually read it, and the patient was on room air. So we kind of had to figure out a lot of things at the same time. How much do we believe this or not? And do we consider ourselves as the final adjudicators of these results? So on and so forth. So those are a couple of places right now where I'm seeing AI in my practice on a daily basis.
So, you know what? I think that's incredible. And you brought up some really great points. But in our practice as hospitalists in the past, we ran across pulmonary nodules all the time. And what to do about it? The ED does a scan for whatever it is that they came in for. And here we are with this nodule. How are we going to find out? How will they get the next scan? If it's something to monitor, who's the primer? It's very difficult. But now if AI is finding them, you're categorizing them, I think that's that's incredible. The follow-up though is maybe a little bit difficult. As far as, so what you just told me right now is that we still need human beings, and we know that. And so using AI as a tool, because you had to see the patient, you wanted to see, are they okay? Are they breathing? Are they on oxygen? And so that's something that AI didn't do, but that was your tool, and you had to go in and see the patient. So we still need the doctors involved. We're always saying, because people are afraid maybe their job is going to be replaced. And right now you just proved we do need the doctors, and use this as a tool. That's what we're kind of advocating.
Right.
I want to
ask about implementation of AI, because many hospitals are just beginning to implement AI, especially in radiology departments and to do lung imaging. It's not widespread. It's starting, I think, in 2025, it's fair to say that, you know, most hospital systems are in the implementation mode, where in 2024, they were just learning about it. As you know, I was at RSNA, and there were over 500 different companies that have FDA approved AI algorithms, 75% in radiology, and many of them are competing with each other for algorithms that look specifically at lung nodules or pneumothorax. How did your hospital decide which of these software algorithms to use? And what, given that you're an expert in this area, what are your thoughts giving it advice to this? Is it like a chief AI officer that makes that decision? Did you have input? Does a radiologist have input? How does that happen?
So I will shamelessly plug my YouTube lecture, which is called Which AI Should I Buy? It goes through exactly this, and you bring up a very good point, right? A lot of times we have the conversation, and the conversation sometimes is, do I need to buy an AI? I don't know if everybody needs to buy AI right now, but everybody needs to have that conversation, right? They have to see if that is the answer for their circumstances. And I think it is definitely time that that conversation should happen regularly. As far as our practice, so we have the NLP software, and I do not believe, at least at the time that it was being looked at, there were other softwares doing similar things. A lot of what we have in the nodule space, even the literature, mostly focuses on nodules that have been identified or identifying new nodules and judging their radiology risk on the imaging. And you're completely correct. That is a very crowded space. It is very difficult to understand whether one is better than the other as far as the software goes. If you think of it as a clinical trial for, you know, antibiotics or inhalers, whatever you may have, ideally, we'd like to do a randomized trial and see which one is better on whatever, you know, metric we choose. We don't really have that stuff for pulmonary lung nodules, at least to my knowledge. So the decision on which AI to buy comes down to, where are the gaps in the nodule pathway? If you feel you want to increase your funnel to make sure nodules are captured in the incidental realm, then NLP software to look at reports is a good option. If you find that, you know, we're doing a good job about capturing the nodules, but we need to do a better job about triaging or managing them, maybe getting a nodule program and nurse navigator to work through those things. This is probably better than AI software. So it may not even be that AI is the answer in that circumstance. Maybe you feel that, you know, we have a pretty good nodule pipeline, but in our circumstance, we don't have many pulmonologists or thoracic surgeons, and our primary care doctors are managing a lot of the nodules. Okay, in that case, perhaps trying to better judge the risk of cancer and having software help do that. Maybe that's a better place of implementation. Maybe all these things are great, but you need the newer technologic systems to actually do the biopsies, and that's a better place of investment. It just kind of depends. And I think, you know, you brought up another point, right? Like, who's making those decisions? I don't think for a successful outcome, any of those decisions can be made in a silo, right? I can't say as a doctor that I want whatever I want, and we have to be, you know, agnostic to implementation, logistics, data security, price. We can't just say we want the thing that's the most shiny. We want a halo purchase that's most expensive, or just pick something that's the cheapest if it doesn't work either. These decisions cannot be made in a vacuum. So it really has to be clinical stakeholders, administrative and leadership teams kind of deciding together and deciding what is the best AI for me or us, rather than what is the best AI. I guess that's sort of a very long answer to your question, but I think it's a long conversation.
Were you, and do you know who at your institution was involved with the decision to use the products that you're using? Did they ask the clinicians, or was it just administration who decided?
So there were some conversations with the clinicians, but our institution is part of a much larger system. So in that circumstance, there's always input and directions from home base, so to speak. So there's another stakeholder sort of, you know, in that conversation, and everybody together has to judge and then give inputs. One thing that's interesting, and this is not commentary on any particular product or hospital or anything to that sort, is unlike hardware, software can be implemented, changed, upgraded, and those kinds of things much easier. So of course, you know, contracts may be long-term, so on and so forth, but outside of that, it's easier to do those things and make changes. So you got to keep that in mind as well. And maybe as far as implementation goes, we do a try before you buy. And why not, you know, do pilots or demos, and that happens. And I think that's very fair, because at the end of the day, you want people using stuff if they are best positioned to understand the ideal deployment, use case, limitations, because it's just a better outcome for everyone involved, especially patients.
Right. So at our scientific session, which is going to be in September here in Chicago, we'll have the area where the professors will be discussing the evidence-based literature like you talked about. But in the next room, which is separate, is an exhibit hall where physicians could actually do the demos and practice using these AI algorithms. Now, Anne and I went to a AI conference in Orlando, and we were able to, in that exhibit hall, see some of the demos live. And that, I think that is really a good point that you make. It's nice to, I love your, I want to quote you, try before you buy. I think that is a brilliant message to take home from today's podcast. Great. Now, we covered the lung nodules and the pneumothorax, and those are well established. But what would be some things that maybe physicians listening may not know that could be done in pulmonary.ai? Specifically, you're an interventional pulmonologist, which is a whole nother layer of training. Is AI starting to get into the interventional pulmonary world?
Sort of is the best answer. This is a sneak peek into the future at some level. And again, I'll plug my recent paper, which is AI in bronchoscopy, really. And there's some literature showing, it was a paper in Scientific Reports, and I can send you the link, on autonomous needle steering in vivo. Basically, the robot drives itself. So researchers did demonstrate in a porcine model where they had predetermined target, a robotic system commandeered, and I'm making a lot of generalizations here, but commandeered a needle scope in the porcine model and navigated to the location it had to go. So that is autonomous bronchoscopy, more or less. The paper that I was asked to write was referencing an underlying article where researchers used AI to see if they could influence the education of bronchoscopists. So what they did is they had novices, beginners, and intermediates all split at different levels of bronchoscopy experience, do bronchoscopy at the European Respiratory Society meeting in 2023 on phantoms, on a anatomic model. And they saw how they did with AI and without that. AI made everybody better, and some of the benefits were more pronounced for the more junior participants. So the beginners started to function like intermediates, and the intermediates began to function like experts. And this sort of goes back, Anne, to I think what you said, which is, about job loss or job threat, but it's more that the physician AI combination seems to be better than either alone. And you now have an additional other helper. So Mel, as far as AI and bronchoscopy goes, that's kind of where things are right now. We don't know where it's going to go necessarily. We don't know where in a procedure, for example, does the human hand off to the AI? Is that even necessary? We don't know if it makes more sense to invest in closing that last mile for the lung nodule example. Maybe it's a non-AI way. Maybe it's AI just trying to tell us what portion of the lung nodule to try and sample more so than do the sampling. And AI combined with radiomics can give a better example of tumor heterogeneity. So if the AI tells me I need to be distal or proximal, and I'm able to do that with existing tools, then that's great. That's all you need. We don't need it for something else. Potentially, again, we don't know any of this right now. This is certainly interesting, but definitely worth the conversation we're having.
So early AI is going to have early detection then for these nodules, but do we have any data saying it's prolonging life with the early detection, or is it too soon to have that data?
Fantastic point. I think it is too soon. To my knowledge, I do not know if we have that. And then, what do we have information on that tells us that we are prolonging life? We have information that lung cancer screening works, right? We know there's mortality benefit from lung cancer screening. So maybe AI is not needed to identify or judge the scans, but maybe AI is needed to identify who should be getting lung cancer screening scans. And maybe the AI can make sense of the jumbled abbreviation heavy medical notes that we do, and can look at that and just generate a list for humans to follow up on. And we improve lung cancer screening, and AI helped us in that way rather than on the actual nodule. Again, you can deploy technology, or whether it's human capital or technological capital, you can deploy it in different places depending on where it makes sense. And I think it comes back to who's making the decisions, or what's the decision-making framework. And it's multidisciplinary, many stakeholders, in my experience at least.
Yes, great. Maybe we'll have to adjust some of the guidelines when we're monitoring if AI is being utilized, as far as when to monitor next if AI is involved.
Along Anne's point, my hope is that sometime in the next year that our college issues guidelines on how to use AI for each subspecialty. And I would really love it if you would partner with me and Anne in generating an AI and pulmonary guideline, since you're clearly one of the leaders in AI and pulmonary right now. And I think it's really important that we share or have a resource yes. for physicians to have a guideline on how to use it and how to use it well and
but
take
to do with the result.
Exactly. When we get it. Well right. stated. Great. So our organization has an educational arm and a research arm, and the research arm has over 25 lab groups, but the pulmonary lab group team has just finished a draft that we're about to publish on AI and interstitial lung disease, specifically being able to drill down based on the CT images without a biopsy, which exact diagnosis of the over 100 or 200 interstitial diseases out there. Any thoughts on that topic?
I agree with you that, you know, that's something that's going to be very, very helpful. We increasingly are moving away from histology or tissue for ILD diagnosis, or at least the, you know, the initial part of it. So AI in ILD and at some level in small airways disease, asthma, COPD, is now getting a little bit more prominence in pulmonology. It used to be all just nodules and lung cancer. So if we can have many products, competition is always good, I think, for patients. Try and demonstrate different levels of success, or maybe they're all very successful, then that's really terrific for our patients, so we can identify those who may benefit from early antifibrotic therapy as things stand right now. So that would be welcome developments for sure.
Okay, I want to ask you something for the future. Let's say 2 to 5 years from now, what do you predict will be available for AI in pulmonary?
It's a very tricky question. I'm honored that you're asking me the tricky question. Don't
no
me
wrong answer.
it's such a tricky question because things are moving so quickly, right? We've not really seen things move this quickly in medicine.
What would you like to see happen?
Yeah, I think what I would again, this is such a broad question, but one thing that I think we will probably see our head towards is disease special modules, like a multimodal AI for pulmonology. So if you have a CAT scan, right, we can tell the degree of emphysema. We can tell if there's a nodule. We can judge the size of pulmonary vasculature. We can see if there is pruning of pulmonary vasculature. We can see if there's early interstitial changes. And if I could have, you know, one pulmonary AI software that gives me maybe three or four different things or things that are most concerning, that would be wonderful, because then that early warning or that head start, just having that information is really, really neat. Now, again, you brought up a great point earlier. Does that ultimately change outcomes? And, you know, we don't know that right now. But at least if we get information like this, maybe that kind of report is enough to just convince someone to quit smoking, right? Just that piece of information there permits me to take that intervention over the hump, so to speak. Somebody quit smoking. Fantastic. That's already a success, in my opinion. So yeah. That would be something that I would love to see.
So right now, the software, is it just really addressing one issue then? And yes. I'd like to see multimodal. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
And maybe that's something you should work on.
Maybe, right? And why not take a leap further and say, hey, on the scans, we also have bone density. Why don't we give an output about sure. bone density? Sure. Hey, we also have coronary arteries visualized, maybe not all of them, but most of them. And maybe we give coronary scores, or at least a rough binary output, you know, maybe just enough to say, okay, you need a dedicated coronary CT, or okay, just see a cardiologist, just yes. that much.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Any closing thoughts for the listeners? Anything else you want to share with our audience about pulmonary.ai, or what things we don't know, that pearls that we should know that we don't know?
You know, I'm I appreciate you guys having me on. So I want to say that again. As far as closing comments, I think one of the main things that I've learned, heard, or encountered so far has been there's a gap in physician education, you know. So even if we don't learn necessarily about the individual pieces of literature, we should spend time trying to understand where AI in medicine is going. It's already here. Learning about this at some level is not optional anymore. And I think the work that you guys are doing, you know, needs to be highlighted. And I know we can count on the college as being a tremendous resource for this. And certainly from my side, as far as pulmonary.ai goes, it's my small effort. Where I just hope people can go look at some stuff a little bit organized and then use that as a springboard to go on to other resources. You know, I hope people listening are able to attend the annual meeting in September and just remain educated and are in a good position to decide which AI should they buy or just decide whether they need any AI or not. Nothing wrong with being educated, and we can do the best job for our patients. So I guess in conclusion, physician education is where I try and spend my time, and I appreciate the work you guys are doing in the same. So thank you.
Well, we really appreciate you having that website that people can go to familiarize themselves. And I'm sure that that's going to grow, and we look forward to following you on there as well.
Bish, thank you for being on the podcast today. It was a pleasure. And thank you for being truly one of the leaders right now in pulmonary and AI. And, you know, you're also leading by example. Bish has applied to be a fellow in our college. We will be having our first round of fellowship at our national meeting. So for those of you that want to follow in Bish's footsteps, you can join our organization, apply to be a fellow of the American College of Artificial Intelligence in Medicine. If you like what you heard today, consider coming to our conference in Chicago, McCormick Place, in September. We hope to see you there and have a great rest of your day. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed what you heard here today, consider becoming a member of our professional society by going to www.americancollegeaim.org and click join. Also, don't forget to save the dates. September 19th and 20th, 2025, we'll be having our first ever scientific session at McCormick Place right here in Chicago. Go to our website to register to attend the conference. We hope to see you all live in Chicago, and we look forward to having you tune in to our next podcast on Melvin Monday here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube.